This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This game week, game one for your Seattle Seahawks coming up this weekend. They hit the road, take on the Indianapolis Colts, and starting to look like Carson Wentz will play. That's what it's looking like. But we'll talk to a man who covers the team for ESPN.com. He's our buddy, our pal, and he's with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Brady Henderson is here. What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys? How are you? Thanks for having me.
We're getting excited, ramping up for game number one of the season, of which, I don't know. What do you think? Is Wentz going to play? I know we're all guessing here, but it's just based on what we're seeing recently, on NFL Network and NFL Live, all these shows, it feels like he's going to play.
Yeah, I mean, I have not been following that as closely as obviously some of the Colts writers would, but whenever a guy is a full participant in practice on Monday, that's usually a good sign. So, I mean, we'll obviously wait and see how he does, see if he has any setbacks throughout the week. But being a full participant on Wednesday, that's always a good sign.
Hey, Brady, what are you going to be have your eye on? What are you more curious? I could make the case that, for me, it's about the defense. I mean, look, the big question mark is, what's the offense going to look like? We didn't see any of the starters or anything, but, man, they just can't start out the way they did last year. And to me, I'm a defensive guy, so I guess I'm biased. But for you, what's your biggest, what are you most curious to see in game one?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's on both sides of the ball. I want to see what that offense looks like. And we really did not see any – I mean, we saw some starters, a couple guys on the offensive line play, but didn't see any of Wilson, Metcalf, Lockett, obviously not Dwayne Brown, Chris Carson. So there's the majority of their starters on offense. We did not see them in the preseason. And so we really don't have a great sense, I think, as to what exactly that offense is going to look like in a game situation. Now, we've seen it in practice. We know about the tempo that they're going to run. And we know about the quick passing game. But I'm just really interested to see probably more than the tempo. I'm interested to see what that quick passing game looks like against an actual opponent and how the offensive line holds up. For as good as it is to have Dwayne Brown back, and that's obviously a huge boost for them, that offensive line has not gotten very many reps together. Well, it really got no reps in terms of the starting five because Brown didn't practice throughout training camp. And so as important as continuity is, we really haven't – they're not going to have had any of that. We haven't seen any of that except for – maybe these first couple practices of this week. And so that's a big thing. And then defensively, I want to see what that cornerback situation looks like. It's still the biggest question mark on their roster, as far as I'm concerned, even after all the reshuffling that they did. I think they catch a bit of a break with T.Y. Hilton not being out there. Carson Wentz missed a lot of the summer with his foot injury. So maybe that's kind of a soft landing for those guys. And I think just given the fact that they don't have that clear-cut Pro Bowl caliber guy, at least it doesn't look like they do, I think that's going to be nice for them, at least heading into week one. And then week two, they've got AJ Brown and Julio Jones.
Yeah, I don't feel great about that, Brady. That's the one spot on this team that it's kind of like my new offensive line, where I used to year in, year out complain about the O-line. I feel like it's going to be the cornerbacks now, because I feel like they went out and got a bunch of guys. I think DJ Reed is the standout, but we don't know if he's durable enough to play 17 games. And then everybody else is a question mark for varying reasons. I just don't have a ton of confidence in the group they've assembled, and it doesn't feel like they've the money they invested, they just traded away in Akella Witherspoon. So, yeah, that's going to be really interesting to see how that group pans out, and maybe an improved. But do you think the pass rush is going to be improved? You get a full year of Dunlap. You bring in Hyder Jr. You don't have the man, the extra meeting guy, as Dave calls him. But you've got a collection that feels like, in totality, it could be, a group that brings up a lot of sacks.
Yep, and that could help the cornerbacks too. Putting more pressure on the cornerback and maybe forcing the quarterback into maybe to throw the ball just a little bit quicker than he otherwise would. And yeah, I mean, I've said this before. It looks to me like the deepest group of edge rushers that they've had since their 2013 Super Bowl team, and they're not quite as deep in the interior, and that's why I'm sure that's why they had they brought Geno Atkins in for a visit, and I would imagine that he is still on their radar just because he left without a contract, and they still have not as much of pass rushing firepower on the inside as they do on the outside, even though, you know, maybe they could expect Puna Ford to take a jump there. You said they don't have the extra meeting guy, as they've called it, and they don't. They've got a lot of really good guys, but not that, you know, all pro caliber guy. And I just wonder if maybe that is in some way Pete Carroll's MO. He always talks about how you can never have enough pass rushers. And when you have one of those guys, you know, Frank Clark making $20 million, DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, Von Miller, Aaron Donald, those guys who are making that big money, well, it's harder to you know, have other guys at that spot, just because you can't pay everybody. And so I kind of wonder if maybe that's why we have not seen the Seahawks give that massive contract to a pass rusher. I mean, they had an opportunity to do it with Frank Clark, and they didn't. And maybe there are some other reasons there. But I almost wonder if maybe Carroll's preference, as weird as this sounds, would be to have more of a deep group like what he's got than to have that one stud guy and then trying to fill in around him. Either way, it looks like it could be a strength of theirs this season.
Brady, do you think that there's pressure on Ken Norton Jr.? Just because the way they started off, I mean, they finished well, but a lot of people would say, well, those weren't the greatest offenses in the world. But, yeah, I mean, just they just can't have that kind of start. I mean, I remember the passing yards at one point were on a pace to eclipse both the 13 and 14 defense combined. So, you know, I just wonder if at you know, coming in, you got to start fast on defense. I'm just curious how much you think, because we always say, you know, it's Pete's defense, but you know, Ken Norton is also the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, is there pressure on him? I think there's pressure on him from us, you know, from writers and radio people. I don't think there's pressure on him in the sense that his job would be in jeopardy. And I say that just because if that was ever going to happen, if his job was ever going to be in jeopardy, it probably would have happened early last season when their defense was terrible. And, yeah. I think some of what you saw early last season, there's a bit of a qualifier there because as they will remind you, and I do think there's some truth to this, that, you know, getting out ahead the way that they did, you know, that I think forced a lot of teams into catch-up mode. They were throwing the ball all over the place. And the Seahawks, you know, were playing sort of, you know, prevent-style defense where they will sort of concede some of those yards. I think that explains some of it, certainly not all of it. And a huge part of their issue early last season was the pass rush. And you would think that if teams were in catch-up mode and throwing the ball all over the place like they were, then that's, you know, that's a pass rusher's dream. Those guys can pin their ears back, so to speak. And so, but I think they deserve credit for, and Norton deserves some credit for this, is figuring out their pass rush to where that was a liability in the first half of that season. And it really was probably the biggest reason for their defensive turnaround late last year. So I don't think he's in any pressure in terms of hot seat or anything like that, but if they do struggle out of the gates, yeah, I think some of the conversations that you're having, that I'm writing about, those are going to be the same as last year.
Yeah, they had 37 sacks the last 10 games. So, and, you know, they were seventh. And that was a pretty good recovery, you know, from the year before as far as sacks goes. Because what they were second to last. What was the number, Bob? 28? Something like that?
28.
Yeah.
Tied for second to last or third. Yeah, they were right near the bottom of the league. And that was with Jadeveon Clowney. And everybody said, oh, you know, they've got to re-sign him. They've got to pay him $20 million, whatever he was looking for. And it just never made sense to me because pass rush wasn't that great with him. So what's the sense in, you know, paying him all that money if they weren't really great with him?
Brady, what is your sense in terms of the national perception of this team? Something I brought up with Dave and Mike here, and we'll bring it up with John Clayton, is that, you know, it just seems in articles that are written, and I know these are all predictions and talking points, but, you know, hey, how does the NFC West shake out? And more often than not, I'm seeing the Seahawks place third behind the Rams and the 49ers, you know, in some variation. Some have the Rams winning, some have the 49ers winning, but Seahawks are generally third. We've talked about the computer simulation thing that has them starting 0-9 to start the season. All these different little outside sources that seem to look at this roster and go, eh, average, not very good. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? It feels like it's a better roster than it was last year, yet the attitude toward the team or the expectations seem to be awfully low.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't aware of the projection that had them starting 0-9. That's kind of a tough one to fathom. I think I would imagine that a lot of it has to do with, A, with you know, the drama from earlier this offseason with Russell Wilson. And, I mean, I don't know if that would impact them, you know, in the win-or-loss column this season. It's possible that that would have zero impact on it. But when I think when people, you know, who are asked to make predictions like this are asked to rank teams, it's something that they may factor in, even if it ultimately might have nothing to do with what happens on the field this year. I also think it's probably a product of it's the function of how good the NFC West is. And, you know, maybe there's a feeling that, and I could see this, that these teams just kind of beat up on each other. And I don't know if I've been asked to, I don't know if I've actually had to formally rank the teams in the NFC West, but I mean, I think it's pretty close among the top three, and you can make a case for any of those teams winning the division. You probably have to reach harder to make a case for the Cardinals, but certainly the Seahawks, Rams, and 49ers, it's pretty easy to see the situation, you know, the season playing out to where any of those three teams make it. And I kind of tend to always say this, like, when in doubt, go with the team that has the best quarterback. And even though the Rams got a pretty big upgrade at quarterback from Jared Goff to Matthew Stafford, I still think the Seahawks have the best quarterback. And so I still think that as evenly matched as they are elsewhere throughout their rosters, I think Wilson puts them over the top. But I don't pick them to win the division with any sort of confidence. I think, like I said, I think it could go any three of those ways.
How dare you come on the show without the NFC West ranked, Brady? Of course. Yeah. No, it's, to me, the one thing that, to me, that is mystifying.
We lost him.
We lost him. I'll continue.
You know, this is Lefko, I think we learned this morning.
I have a shudder. I know that sound by now.
Yeah, that was, in fact, not our guest's phone. We were taping somebody for the Get in the Cage podcast this morning, and we had that. You hear a little buildup, hear a little crackle, and then they're gone. And we thought, oh, it's his phone. He's got a bad phone. No, it's our system.
All right. It's on us.
It's been confirmed. Right. It's our system.
Yeah. What was I saying?
You were in the middle of asking him a question. Yeah.
You know what I always say when my wife says that? What was I saying? And it's the Monty Python line. I always go, I think you finished.
Oh. I think you were done.
Yeah.
You don't have anything left to say.
No. But, yeah, it's just weird to me that that the Rams get that much respect. You know, I saw today on NFL Network.
Their addition seems to outweigh anything they've lost.
Yeah.
Matt Stafford seems to outweigh the two members of their secondary. Was it three members of the coaching staff?
Yeah, well, all I know is Brandon Staley left.
Well, and Waldron left. And
yeah, well, Waldron and Dickerson came here. Yeah. But, I mean, Staley, I shouldn't discount Waldron, but Staley took that team from a very mediocre defense for them the year before. They were mid, 15, 16 rank in the NFL as far as yards and points to number three, number one in some categories. I think they were number one in like two or three categories. If you look at like yards passing, total yards, points, rushing yards. So I just thought that was a huge brain drain there. And, you know, maybe McVay is great. He's such a good coach. He can overcome all of that. But, you know, the upgrade to Goff, I'll never not say that it's an upgrade.
Oh, it
from
is.
From Jared Goff.
Certainly is.
You know, but
I absolutely agree. But
Matthew
enough
Stafford.
To, does yeah. it, is it worth more?
I think he has a lot to prove.
Yeah. Is it, but does he overshadow? Does he overcome? Is he worth more than what they've lost? Coaches and players in the secondary. They lose the running back to an injury. They've suffered a lot of losses. There's been some attrition with that team.
Right.
And then, but the idea is that he is this big of a difference maker. So, yeah, you lost that. But look at this. Look what we got here. And if that's the case, then how are there not more eyes on Seattle or more optimism around Seattle? Because you've got a proven commodity in Russell Wilson, who's got a Super Bowl title, who's been to two Super Bowls. Matthew Stafford's 0-3 in the postseason in his entire career. So if you're putting it on his presence and saying this makes them that much better, well, then shouldn't you be looking at the Seahawks going, yeah, they've got a proven commodity right there, and I believe we've got Brady back with us. Sorry about that, Brady.
I think we were just talking about the NFC West, Brady, and San Francisco, too. We just talked about the brain drain as far as coaching goes with the Rams, and then also, they lost a few players, lost one to injury and stuff like that. Then you go to San Francisco, and you're like, because I'm trying to be objective and not just overly, a homer here, but you go to San Francisco. His problems at quarterback. I mean, what are you going to do? Is Garoppolo really that good? I think he's the worst NFL quarterback under pressure. He's not great at throwing outside the numbers, as Moyer always points out. But so plenty of questions there. So I guess, you know, it's just funny you look at I feel like I'm being maybe a little bit of a homer, you know, because we're here. But I don't see, you know, San Francisco, I guess, is the one that is probably the biggest mystery just because of all the injuries last year.
Yeah, and I think also because you don't know what the quarterback situation is going to look like. And it sounds like Garoppolo is going to start, at least to begin the season. I would imagine that, you know, a guy that is drafted that high in Trey Lance, that they're going to get him on the field at some point. But whenever that is, he's only going to have a limited number of starts in college. I think it was
17.
What was it? Yeah, 17 starts in college, and he's obviously playing at a much smaller level against inferior competition. And, you know, the season last year, I think, was cut short due to COVID. And so has not played a lot of football, has not started a lot of games, has not played a lot of football in the last year or so. And, you know, I also think, and maybe I've made too much of this, but the one thing I always think of is, you know, he does not have in Garoppolo the ideal, what I would consider the ideal mentor quarterback, the way that, you know, say Matt Hasselbeck was for Andrew Luck or Josh McCown was for Sam Darnold, just a veteran guy like that who is accepting of his role as the backup quarterback. You know, I don't know if maybe Garoppolo is a great guy and maybe he's helped him and everything, but Garoppolo is a guy who still considers himself a starter. And by the way, he hasn't played a ton of football either, just because he's been injured for much of his career. And so it doesn't seem to me like the ideal situation to break in a rookie quarterback in that regard. Now, it is ideal in other regards, the fact that you've got, you know, maybe the best play caller in the NFL in Kyle Shanahan and one of the game's best offensive minds. So that's obviously a plus, and maybe that makes up for it. But it just the quarterback situation does not seem ideal with Garoppolo. I just don't think he's the ideal mentor.
Yeah, to your point, Brady, 32 starts in the NFL since 2014. That's not a ton, Garoppolo.
No.
Yeah.
He did get to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he did.
I'll give him that. So he certainly got more under his belt to fall back on.
Yeah, 13-3.
And he probably knows which direction the sun rises.
Yes.
Don't get Dave going. Well,
most importantly.
Don't get Dave going.
That's what happens when you go to Cal.
Brady, looking at this team as it's currently constructed, the roster as it is, what surprises you, if anything, now that you've kind of seen what the, you know, who got cut, who was brought back, who's on the practice squad, all of it, as the roster sits right now, are there any head scratchers or any surprises to you?
You know, I thought that they might bring in another linebacker for their 53-man roster just because they're so short there. I mean, they've got, I think, four true linebackers, not counting Daryl Taylor, but, you know, that does include Nick Ballor, who's a fullback who's playing linebacker. So, I mean, the surprises I have in terms of the way, you know, in terms of how the 53-man roster has shaken out since they've set it initially last week, I think that's maybe one surprise. Another big one is that they have three quarterbacks on their 53-man roster, which is something that I can't remember the last time they had three on their, you know, active roster. They usually carry two on the active roster, which is a luxury that obviously Russell Wilson's durability affords them. And they keep one guy on the practice squad, and right now they've got three with Wilson, Geno Smith, and Jake Luton. So I have kind of thought and assumed that Luton is going to end up on their practice squad, and maybe that'll happen this week before the game. But those are probably the two biggest surprises. And then just all of the shuffling that they've done at quarterback or cornerback, I guess that doesn't surprise me just because we know that they're still kind of searching for answers there. And they like Bless Osseo. You know, Carroll talked about his physicality, and I've heard him kind of compared I don't want to say this because I don't want to set unrealistic expectations, but he's a very physical guy. But you know, Carroll made that point today, but he also said that, you know, it's going to be hard for him to kind of come in and make an impact right away. And we kind of heard something similar from Ken Norton Jr. on Sidney Jones. So that all leads me to believe that Trey Flowers and DJ Reed are still the two likeliest guys to at least begin the season as the starters.
Is it still just four receivers, or did Penny Hart, was he activated or he was brought back to the
Penny
practice
Hart
squad?
Was activated, yeah.
So you got five now.
I believe that they got five receivers, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and they got a bunch on their practice squad too, right? Cody Thompson and I don't Brady you would
Aaron Fuller.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Brady, we appreciate it, man. Always fun to catch up with you, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Okay, sounds good, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brady.
There you go. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com. Always a good conversation with him. You see Gurriel's hair? He looks like one of those troll dolls that used to be popular. He and his brother both.
The reason why we see his hair is because he almost took a fastball right in the face.
Yeah, that was the bonnet ball right there. It was threw that right up around the helmet there, and the helmet went flying off, and then you see his... What is that?
It looks like, what were those little troll dolls?
The troll dolls, that's what I was just saying, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just said that.
I thought you had a special name for it.
No, it's a troll
hey, Bob,
doll.
When you think about it, think about this. You know those little troll dolls that they have?
I should have thought of that. That's what I was searching for. Lefko's in there laughing at you now. yeah, the Gurriel brothers both have the same hairdo. It's called electric shock therapy is what it looks like. It's not a good look. Nobody wins with that look, Dave. But we're rooting
like
for the Yankees here.
That hair, like when somebody gets shocked or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, Dave. But we're in the odd position of rooting for the Yankees in this game because the Toronto Blue Jays have leapt ahead of the Mariners in the standings there. So you need the Blue Jays to come back down. All right. Our thanks to Brady Henderson for joining us on the program. Coming up, just how bad was that Huskies loss to Montana? We're going to break it down on Washington Wednesdays, the debut edition coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
It's the debut edition, Dave, of Washington Wednesdays. They've got a game under their belt, and it's a pig of a game already, losing to Montana. Montana in the opener. With all due respect to Montana, I'm sure they're a fine group of young men.
But well,
this was a top 25 ranked Husky team at home, though.
Yeah.
This was not supposed to go this way, Dave.
Well, this will make all the Husky fans angry. You know, last year they beat Central Washington 59-3 and Portland State 48-7, Montana did. And in 2019, they actually went to the playoffs, FCS playoffs, and shoot, they only lost four games the entire year. And so, and they had 10 wins.
Yeah,
but you know, so I mean, it's not a terrible program, but nobody wants to hear that right now. All they want to hear is you got to bash the Huskies for, you know, for what they did losing to Montana. It was pretty bad. I mean, you know, you look at the output, you know, with the quarterback, Dylan Morris, 27 for 46, 226 yards, but three picks, man.
Oof.
Yeah,
oof.
You turn the ball over, which they didn't get takeaways. They didn't get any interceptions anyway, so. That's a tough one for a lot of Husky fans to swallow. And I know, you know, it's always been this way up here that the Huskies just expect, like, they view this program as a top 10 program in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just how people.
You're saying
think.
That's not true?
I just think, you know, I think sometimes it's a little inflated here locally that they're like, they think it's 1991.
You feel like the expectations are a touch out of whack?
Just a little bit. And I have to say, though, you know, there's lots of people here, and my wife's family included, that are huge, like Husky fans with all the purple and everything, didn't go to Washington.
Yeah.
It's more just, you know, like a regional, you know, college football team that they love, and they got a good thing going here. I just remember in the days, like in the glory days of the Huskies, I remember coming up here and getting tattooed. I mean, these guys would hit you.
The Don James teams.
Oh, my gosh. You know, and it was raining, and the crowd would get on top of you. They had this linebacker named Joe Kelly, and Joe Kelly tackled Spencer Cotton, who was our receiver, and then afterwards grabbed him by the jersey and started, like, marching up and down the field with his hand up in the air, like number one, with high knees. And I'm like, that's not a penalty?
Well, that'd be a penalty today, Dave.
Yeah.
Times were different then.
But they were just, I mean, they just were that way. And, you know, with Jimmy Lake, you look, it's one game. We'll see how they turn around. I heard Brock earlier saying today that that he thinks that Washington's going to be competitive at Michigan. You know, we'll
like
see.
This was a wake-up call? Or I mean, I don't know how you, even if you're a big-time Husky fan, how do you sort of explain this one away? You know, FBS versus FCS, it was just, it was a game that was supposed to, that was viewed realistically as gearing you up for the big games coming up.
Right.
Like, this is a good, there's no preseason. This is kind of preseason. This is where they get their feet wet, where they find their rhythm. And the first drive down the field, I mean, they got out, looked like things were going to really go their way. It was, offense was moving, and then it wasn't. And then they're turning the ball over. I mean, they put up 7 points in the first quarter, and then they were shut out after that.
Well, like Mike wrote in the notes, fifth-ranked team to lose to an FCS team since 2000. Just 5 times.
Wow.
That's a lot of games.
You want to hear a worse stat, too? I was looking back. I was actually looking back through Ryan Divish's tweets because he's a big Montana fan.
Yeah.
So he had a lot, and he quote-tweeted the Elias Sports Bureau on September 4th after the game. It says, Montana Grizz football, the first non-FBS team to hold a Pac-12 opponent below 10 points since Grambling State did it to Oregon State in 1985.
Wow.
36 1985,
years.
Oregon State. Yeah, they were not a good program back then.
36 years ago. Wow. Well, here's Jimmy Lake after the game, basically just saying, we were bad everywhere, and we got to be better.
Yeah, you know, watch the film, but we definitely got to be way better than that, that's for sure. Those guys know that. We had run the ball well enough. We had throw the ball well enough. We had protect well enough. We had some opportunities with short fields. I mean, our defense did a good job of, stopping them backed up. We'd start our possession on their side of the field on the 40-ish, right around there, and to come away with no points is unacceptable. And so we're going to have to go back to work tomorrow and get that done.
And then you brought up the stats for Dylan Moore. Oh, no touchdowns, 3 interceptions, just a brutal afternoon. And Jimmy Lake was asked if he would consider a change at the quarterback spot.
You said you didn't consider a quarterback change, but is that something you might evaluate differently coming up this week than you would have otherwise or not?
That had never crossed my mind. No.
Brock Huard thinks it should cross his mind.
Should there be a quarterback conversation? There has to be. When unfortunately an offense performs that way, you know, a friend of mine made a pretty astute point. This is the first time in front of 60,000 fans. And last year you played in all four at home, but they were empty stadiums. There weren't fans booing you. I know the wrath of boos. I thought as that game went on, Dylan played just fine in the first quarter and a half. As that game went on, I think he started to feel Husky Nation come down on him. Mm-hmm. And it's human nature. You're hearing what's being screamed at you. A quarterback, when you play that position, your offense struggles that way, and a couple bad picks in the second half. Yeah, naturally, you're going to have that conversation. I don't think Jimmy will say that publicly.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly didn't say that Monday. He certainly didn't say it after the game. He said, I didn't even think for a second about a quarterback change.
Well, I'll just say this. That Sam Huard is a great kid.
Yeah?
Yeah. We did football 101 thing last year during, you know, when we were all locked down at home and everything, so it was a virtual thing, and he was over at Brock's house, and I like telling this story. He was probably 40 yards away from the basketball hoop because Brock had an outdoor, you know, half-court basketball hoop, and he was trying to, you know, just took a couple shots throwing, you know, like I said, maybe 25, 30 yards away. First one missed a little bit low, second one a little bit high, and then I think he threw the next two right into the basket.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, he's got, and like Brock, I heard him talking earlier. He said he thinks he throws it better than Brock did. And
so is he lefty or righty?
He's righty. But, right. But yeah, it's very interesting. But I remember Moyer saying, I think he was doing sports or something. Was he working radio or maybe he was just coaching? But he said he thought Brock Huard had like the best arm he'd ever seen. And coming
Moyer was saying that?
Out of high school. Yeah, as far as a high school. So it's, you know, if Brock thinks that he throws it better, I mean, look, this is not the plan. It sounds like for sure that Jimmy Lake was not really even considering that.
How about getting that question after week one? You thinking of a change at quarterback? I mean, that was your first game of the season already. What's going on with the quarterback?
Yeah.
That's a rough start, man.
Well, now you're going to Michigan, and that'll be interesting. If they go there and upset Michigan, I don't think we'll be able to get El
Hombre is going to be a little out of sorts on Tuesday. We'll see.
You'll go from El Hombre to El Diablo.
El Diablo in a really, really big hurry. Yeah. All right. There you go. Debut edition of Washington Wednesdays. Meanwhile, we've got What If Wednesday. Wednesday brings a lot of great things, and what if? What if the Seahawks do finish third in the division? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
What?
What?
What? What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter.
We've been state champions, no doubt.
Lyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
It is What If Wednesday, which is presented by Hardwick and Pendergast Personal Injury Attorneys. We do it every week, and we tend to do it before our conversation with John Clayton because, as we've learned over the years, he doesn't like to do hypotheticals. He doesn't play well with others when it comes to hypotheticals. So we get it out of the way before we speak with him, which we will do at the top of the hour. But this is the hypothetical that pertains to what we were talking about with Brady and some of what I saw and I sent you guys last night, just kind of the overwhelming view from the outside, not locally, but just national publications, national websites, and their opinion on the Seahawks, you know, when everybody's doing their predictions. And I would say the majority of the ones I've read around the Seahawks, there's not a lot of optimism around them. They're kind of like expecting them to be like, nah, they might be a middling team. And, you know, one of ESPN's projection models had them starting 0-7. Yahoo's season preview, I think I sent that last night, has them finishing third behind the Rams and 49ers. So, hypothetically, if they did finish third, let's say, what would that mean? Because if I'm looking at that, and they're relative, like Russell didn't get hurt, Dwayne Brown didn't get hurt, Chris Carson's out, like if they're relatively healthy and their superstars are there, and yet they finish third, and they don't get to the postseason, that is a massive failure. This is not a team like the Mariners who are building for the future, who we're looking at going, man, they're kind of, you know, exceeding expectations right now. This is gravy. They're really going to compete next year and years beyond. No, the Seahawks are in the middle of it. They're in the thick of competing now. It's about a Super Bowl now. It's about certainly about getting past the first round of the playoffs now, much less failing to get there. That would be, I don't know how you could view it any other way other than a failure if that were to happen.
What if the Seahawks finish third in the division? What if monkeys fly out of my butt, Bob? Come on.
You're saying
there's no way.
Which is more likely?
The latter. You know, I'm looking at the Vegas odds. Actually, they're, you know, if you want to rank them, ninth. So, you know, as far as, you know, I'm looking at just the odds, like they're the ninth most likely. Cleveland's in front of them, Baltimore, the 49ers, the Rams. Now, you know, you got Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Green Bay. What the Buccaneers have done is pretty amazing by signing all 22 of their starters back. So you like their chances. I can understand them and the Chiefs, Bills, up-and-coming team, Packers, same thing. But the Rams, San Francisco, Baltimore, and Cleveland all ahead of, people think are more likely to win the Super Bowl. So
now, is that based on the division they play? I could see them taking that into account, going, well, hey, you know, we've got two of the teams ahead of them in their division. They're going to beat up on each other.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me. I guess it's the most mystifying to me is the Ram thing. You know, the 49er thing, I get it. If you want to say, but still, I would stop you and say, it's still Jimmy Garoppolo. And they got a great, and like Brady Henderson was saying, a great offensive mind in Kyle Shanahan down there. And their offensive coordinator, whose name I can't remember, Lefko, I remember, used to correct me on it all the time. But anyway, you know, he's some boy genius that just has, you know, really good running game, all that stuff. You know, and I don't know if he's the run game coordinator, the offensive coordinator, whatever. Great, you know, great coaching down there. And look, the coaching with McVay and everything, they lost three guys, but still, I think he's a very good coach. But I don't see that. I don't see the Rams, what all of they lost and what the Seahawks have gained. You know, and you think about, okay, yeah, you got to go up against Aaron Donald. Well, they've got a pretty solid offensive line this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got some guys that, you know, I think Damian Lewis is one of those guys. I think
he's a stud.
He can block.
I think he's a stud.
I mean,
an excellent draft pick.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, but I with his strength and everything and how good he is, I think that's a guy you can block up Aaron Donald.
Well,
you can count on it.
And this line has one question mark. It's at center. Because,
yeah.
And it doesn't mean it's bad. We don't know if it's Fuller. We don't know if it's Posick. We don't know if it's who's the new guy they brought in? You were just talking about.
Dakota Shepley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know which of those guys is going to end up being the guy when it's all said and done, but I'll defer to Ray, you know, when he talks about the O-line and said, when you've got really good guards, you could make up for whatever shortcomings may be there with your center. And he's surrounded by two really good guards and Gabe Jackson, who's a really proven commodity. Damian Lewis looked phenomenal last year, even had to play center at one point. I mean, the moment did not look too big for him on any level at all. It doesn't mean they're not going to make mistakes or give up sacks here and there. Sure. But as a whole, as a functioning unit, and that was my favorite thing to watch and complain about was the O-line. I don't have any fear other than I'm just curious about the center. What's it going to look like?
Yeah.
I just don't know who it's going to be and how do they meld. But the two on the left and two on the right, I feel great about it.
Yeah, same here. You know, and then, you know, again, just taking Pete's word for it. This wasn't because people have texted in, well, doesn't Pete always say positive things and pump his guys up? Yeah, he does. But when he was talking about Brandon Shell, it was kind of an aside. He's like, hey, not very many people, because look, you know, if you watch camp, it's kind of hard to tell who has a really good game, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to be sitting there watching every player on every move and every drill, which they do. And that was his assessment there. So, yeah, it's not just the guards. I think both tackles are, well, very solid on one side and, you know, I think pretty solid in Brandon Shell. So, yeah, that part of it kind of escapes me. Again, I'm always trying to go, okay, well, what am I missing? What am I looking at? If they start off and they're not playing physical defense and they're not, you know, if they're getting torched down the field, they're playing off in coverage and guys are screwing up drops and things like that. You know, I mean, that could be a problem. I just don't see this offense sucking. I really don't. I think they're going to be, as long as you have Carson and those two weapons and a couple of good tight ends and a top three quarterback, I think, or four, whatever you want to rank him, I think, you know, you can at least be good, if not great. You know, we'll see. Usually with Russ, he's great. So I saw today Peter Schrager. He's a guy on NFL This Morning or whatever, usually on with, you know, with who's the Nate? I'm trying
Kyle
to think
Brandt.
Of
it.
Huh?
So what? Good Morning Football?
Kyle Brandt. Good Morning Football, yeah. So yeah. Was it Peter Schrager?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, he had Russ as his MVP. And I think they had Lamar Jackson was one person. One person thought it was going to be Dak Prescott, you know, there was a bunch of different ones. But, yeah, I mean, Russ, that he's never received an MVP vote. So
weird.
And he seems happy, you know, this offseason. It seems like they got him what he wanted or what he envisioned. He got protection. He got a target. Got a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he could be left wanting at this point. I mean, you know, he understands as well as anybody there's a budget. You got to work within a salary cap system. You've got to address other situations. You brought in a Pro Bowl guard to take the place of a guy who was failing physically in your potty last year. And, yeah, in terms of what, you know, you only had three draft picks. You spent the first one on a receiver in Eskridge.
Yeah.
So we'll see what he brings to the offense. But, yeah, they've certainly addressed weapons and protection on that side of the ball. It's going to be interesting to see. And who knows? Maybe they, again, it's possible they could have a season that doesn't live up to our expectations. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons why. Health is always first and foremost.
Yeah.
And if you lose a key player, and I've said it 8 million times, if it's Russell, then all the conversation goes out the window. Sorry, Gino, but it does. Yeah. But we'll see what they do. I just, you know, it's just I've noticed the trend of people kind of looking at them with a little squinty eye, like, I'm not sure about them. I'm not that confident in what they're going to do. And I look at the roster and go, yeah, this feels like a better roster than the 12-win roster from last year that won the division. But call me crazy. I don't know. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk some more football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.